Okay, so today, now, we're going to talk about emotional and recovery. So we talked a lot about the physical this morning. And the emotional is it's really about the inventory process. That's the thing that opens the door to emotional recovery, peace of mind, and to me, it's probably the most important aspect of the program in terms of the steps. So, you know, first step, you know, we admitted we're powerless over food, our lives have become unmanageable. Two, you know, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, turned our will and our lives over to the care of God. I didn't spend a lot of time talking about step three and turning our will and lives over to the care of a higher power. You know, I think what comes down to that is, how do I know that I've done step three? I'm willing to do step four. I'm willing to dive into that inventory and look at that stuff I never want to look at, because I have faith that it's going to work out. That, to me, tells me I've done step three. You know, step three, you know, it's one of those things, looking back on hindsight, oh yeah, I did turn my will and my life over to the care of something, whether it's the group, OA, a religious type of higher power, or something that I don't define. And for some people, a really great definition I've heard of a higher power is the difference in my life between not having a higher power and having a higher power. That's my higher power. And so it really is, can be very, very broad. So when we get into the inventory process, that there's so much there. We really have two types of inventory processes. We have step four, the big inventory, and people make a really big deal out of it. It's not. And then, of course, you have a 10-step spot inventory. Now, sometimes that people interpret that as just sort of mentally doing, you know, at night, just sort of reviewing the day. That's fine. Other people will do a written 10-step every night. That's fine. I do a written 10-step when the need arises, when there's something that's bugging me, or it's been suggested to me to do an inventory, then I'll do a 10-step inventory. But basically, the 10-step inventory is a mini fourth step. It's usually on a specific subject, or something's really bugging me right now. But with the inventory process, we get to go and find out, why am I doing what I'm doing? Why do I keep setting myself up? What are those patterns in my life that keep reoccurring that caused me to recreate my childhood in my adult relationships and continue to do the things and be in pain and be bewildered by all these decisions I keep making? I'm trying to do the right thing, but somehow it just doesn't seem to work out. That's where the fourth step inventory comes in. Because a lot of our behavior, a lot of our character defects are really things that protected us. They just went a little amok. And now we sort of have to rein them in. And the big book talks a lot about this idea of the power drivers, the people pleasers and the power drivers. And, you know, we're the people pleasers and trying to manipulate our way into getting control. And if we can't, then we push a little bit harder and a little bit harder, and maybe we push people away or alienate them. And it talks a lot about the actor. And it's a really, really great analogy about how our relationships, how we act in our relationships, that really cause a lot of problems. And the fourth step allows us to get in there and see what's there, what works, what doesn't work. My experience is I learned nothing new in the program. It's all about unlearning. It's like it's clearing away what doesn't work to get to what does work. And what does work, the truth has always been there. It's just been covered by layers of varnish and dirt, and I need to clear that away. And that's what the fourth step does. And the program becomes a series of exercises here. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory. Step five, shared that inventory. Step six, became ready to have these character defects removed. Step seven, asked them to have them be removed. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed. Step nine, make amends to those people that we harm. It's prepare and execute, prepare and execute, prepare and execute. That is the program for the middle steps. And really, that's the way to really work the program successfully. Prepare an execution. How can I have an accident meal if I don't have any of my accident food at home in place, ready to go? I have to prepare and execute. And so much of the time, I create a problem for myself by not planning out my accident meals, or if I'm going to be in an unfamiliar place, have I taken any type of precautions? So a lot of recovery is about prepare and execution. And here in the steps is prepare and execution. So I'm going to talk about, basically it's in the big book, the inventory process and the philosophy behind it. A lot of people use the Hazelton. A lot of people use the workbooks, the 12 foot. They're all good. There's no right way. But they're all going to get to a very, very central point, which is what's working, what doesn't work. And the fourth step in the inventory process is an emotional shorthand. That is probably the best way to put it. So, I'm going to come down here and do some writing. And talk about it. So, as I sit down and do the fourth step, the first time I got to do this, you know, and I was going through looking at things, especially the ninth step, but you know, I didn't harm anybody. How can I do a ninth step? You know, I didn't harm people. Yes.
Did you harm yourself?
Well, the other way around. So my sponsor said, you felt anybody harmed you? I go, you bet. Sure. Okay, well, there's your list. Because I put myself in a position to be harmed. Oh, I wanted to take advantage of this situation and sort of manipulate it this way, and I sort of fit. And then this person rejected me, or rejected what I was trying to do, and got me very upset, and I became hurt. No, I put myself in that position to be hurt. So it flipped it around. So a lot of things, I meet over other people and things. I get resentful. And so when I had to sit down and do this, for one thing, what I got was a lot of relief. Now I sat down the first time to my fourth step and just went through it all at once. And most of it was complaining about other people, and that wasn't really a fourth step, so I got thrown out. So I had to go back and do another one, and I just wrote it out, and it was like 2 pages long. It's probably the most thorough inventory I did. It was the most fearless and searching. Did it cover everything? No. Because about 3 years later in program, I went back and did a much more intensive one because I remembered so much. So much more comes about after I'm working recovery than it did at the very beginning. So you may go back and do a couple of inventories. So one of the things, we'll just do it sort of generically, you know, I resent. You know, I resent my brother. Reason? He got all the attention. He was always getting into trouble. He was always the one that got all the focus. Everyone had to rush to take care of him. He's always creating a problem. He got all the attention and all the resources from the family. So what is it effect to talk about it in the big book? You know, these resentments usually affect a couple of things. Did it affect my self-esteem? Yes, likely it has. Did it affect my personal relations with him and my parents? Yes. Did it affect my ambitions? A little bit. It's like, why try and work hard? He's going to get, you know, he messes up and gets everything he needs, so why should I work hard to strive and get what I want? Maybe I should dispense everything up too, and then my parents will take care of me. Does it affect my ambition? Does it affect my pocketbook? Maybe not in this case. Does it affect my sexual relations? No, not really in this case. So then I get out a separate piece of paper. And on the top of the piece of paper, I write, these are the character defects. If they were removed, would cause me to no longer have this resentment. So what are the character defects about resenting my brother for being, you know, basically a screw-up? That if they were removed, I would no longer resent him.
Envy.
Selfish.
Selfish.
Judgmental. Yes, judgmental. Self-pity.
Fear.
What was that last one?
Fear.
fear? How about playing God?
I know how he should act, and I know how everyone should
treat him, and I know how the interactions with family should take place. What else do we have here? Do we have envy? Do we have selfishness? Do we have judgmental? Do we have self-pity? Do we have fear? Do we have kind of God?
Low self-esteem.
Okay, low self-esteem.
Pride.
Jealousy. Okay. Let's go back here.
I resent, I
resent my wife spending too much money.
Talk about that earlier.
Affects my self-esteem, yes. Personal relations, yes. Ambition, yes. Pocketbook, yes. Sexual relations, yes. Right, okay.
So that covered everything there.
Where do you care for feedback?
That's if they were removed,
the cardinal no longer has this character defect.
A lot of the same list. You know? I would say controlling.
Lack of gratitude.
I'm not looking at the fact that she's a wonderful wife. She's a wonderful mother. She does wonderful things. I'm just looking at what she's doing wrong.
Judgmental.
Hypocritical. I'm not always the best of mine. Selfish.
Andy. Delusional thinking. Why do I think she's going to change? Why do I keep, I've got to be delusional to think that somehow it's going to stop?
Perfectionism.
Fear.
Financial insecurity.
Planning God.
Not trusting in God. If I'm going to be fully taken care of by a higher power, I'm going to go off to about this, and obviously I'm not trusting in a higher power.
Moral superiority.
Yeah. Superiority.
Let's see, what else?
Maybe I tend to be a little bit cold. Distant.
Not a bad start.
So,
when I finish this up, I go back and I sit down and I read this to my sponsor or somebody else. My sponsor may have something else that they want to add to it. I'm like, oh, no, I'm here now.
They suggest another character defect, so I'll put that on there. And then when I go in and do set 7, I'm now ready for you to have all of me, good and bad, and I ask that you remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. God, I'm now ready for you to remove the character defect of envy as it relates to my resentment towards my brother. I'm now ready for you to remove that character defect that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. And when I take a moment, and I actually imagine that character defect being removed. And then I'm going to do the second one. I'm now ready for that to remove to me the character defect of selfishness regarding my resentment towards my brother that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows.
and I go through and do this with all of them, and then I get a little time from it. Now, the other thing it talks about in the book is writing fears. And sometimes you're going to have fears that are completely unconnected to any character defect or resentment on here. But fear is the thing that really just controls our lives. So it says we list our fears on a separate piece of paper, even though they have no connection to any resentment. And then we ask ourselves, to what extent do we have this fear because we are not relying upon a higher power? I'm afraid of losing my job. I'm afraid of something happening to my children. I'm afraid that the diagnosis from my mother's test will come back bad. I just have that free-floating ghost fear that is in there. They're not related to anything specifically with the resentment, but I need to list them, and then with each one, with my sponsor, I go through, to what extent, you know, am I afraid of losing my job? I'm relying on myself and not my higher power. And the answer is every single one of these. I have these fears because I'm not relying on a higher power. I'm relying on me. And there's nothing I can do if I get fired. There's nothing I can do to save my children. I can't be around them 24 hours a day and keep them from falling. Yet, that's a parent's fear. Something's going to happen. And then I have no control over what the test comes back on my mother. Yeah, I'm afraid that it's going to come back and it's not going to be a good result. So, to this extent, it is all self-reliance. And so I have to pray to have those fears removed and to rely upon God. So what I choose to call my God or higher power to relieve me of these fears. And I take some quiet time afterwards and reflect on it. And then, as I talked about yesterday, once those character defects are removed, I then have to act as if they've been removed. So I find that my wife went out and spent a ton of money on something, and I would get upset and go, oh, wait a minute, that character defect was removed. I don't have to get upset about that. Why? Because I'm being taken care of. I have a higher power. I'm going to focus on the gratitude. And I'm not going to get upset. Now, I'm not going to be resentful of my brother when he acts out and everyone in the family drops everything to go take care of him and rush to his defense. Okay. I hope he's okay. Send him my love. I have to act differently. Why? Because the character defect has been removed. And the other thing of it is when I get to do this, let's use my wife as the example. Here's the thing with the character defect. The very act of looking at the character defects and looking at the inventory process is the underlying concept that my view of the situation is not the complete view. I'm willing to entertain an alternative viewpoint, even if I don't know what that viewpoint is. I'm allowed to, and the inventory process opens that door so that I'm not always right. I'm not always the one in control. So that, you know what? Yeah, my wife and I spent that money on. Maybe it was a really good reason. Maybe she went out and bought that thing because it was 40% off, and yeah, it was a big ticket item. But guess what? We needed to replace that refrigerator anyways, and it was 40% off, and okay, I didn't tell you, but I'm not going to call you on every single thing, and we save $300 by doing that. Okay. Could be that. I get to all, you know, look at it in a different view. So the second that I get upset a lot of time, after doing the inventory process a lot, I get to stop and say, oh, well, wait a minute. Maybe there's something else going on here, and let me think about that. And it allows me to have empathy. It allows me to see other people's point of view. Because, quite frankly, I don't like doing that. And then what begins to happen is I stop going into anger and fear every time I get a new piece of information about something. And I can walk into it and say, oh, maybe I'm being taken care of.
I did a lot of fear lists around money. So in 2008, financial future flashed before my eyes, did not look good. My income dropped about 40%. It was very difficult. And, just prior to that, I was in. I had this thing about something would happen, the car would break down, and unexpected expense. I'm like, God, life is throwing me over. This is hell. I don't like this. I'm complaining to my sponsor and my sponsor. Well, you need to get a new life here. You just keep getting screwed over. This is unbelievable. I'm like, I didn't quite get what he was saying. But the thing about the financial insecurity, I remember calling my sponsor, Carol, and he's sarcastic. He's kind of sarcastic guy. He doesn't let me get away with much. And I said, I'm broke. I have no money in my bank account. I don't know how I'm going to make a mortgage payment. I don't know if this is going to happen. I have, no money. And I was in a panic. And I don't see things getting better. I said, okay. Do you have a retirement account? I go, yeah. You can't touch that. It's my retirement account. He goes, money. You got to pay the mortgage. Take a loan out. Take your 401k. Do you have a balance in there? Yeah. Do you have loans that are there? Yeah. Okay. You should be grateful for that. That you have that. He goes, why don't you pray about this? I'm like, okay. Well, I didn't declare bankruptcy. Kept the house. But I do think that, probably going to turn 401k, put money out, called up family members and asked them for money. Can I borrow $1,500? I haven't got time to pass them down. I need to borrow some money. How much? $20,000. After you make the big ask, you're silent. I learned that in sales. You don't say a word. You just let it sit there, out there. And you're like, that was not a pleasant conversation. That was not a pleasant. But I didn't want to go. I knew I wasn't going back a second time, so I figured I might as well ask her a lot. And, I go to my kids were in private school. One of them said, hey, we got to renegotiate here. Keep the kids in here. We got to do something. We got to renegotiate. And I did. And I did all sorts of things. And then somehow, I have everything down to the penny. And then something would come in, and I would just get by. And I'd put some money on a credit card to decide it. Then something else would happen, and I'd just get by. And each month, I'd just get by. And I'd talk to my sponsor. Every time I talk to him, he'd go, are you bankrupt yet? I'm like, no. And during that time, I had an ex-partner, business partner. And we had a very acrimonious fall. And, it was not pleasant. And I had read a lot of inventories about her. And finally, I said, my last inventory, I said, I can't write any more inventories. I'm done. I need to break apart the partnership. The only reason I didn't was getting too much money from it, and I knew I'd have a tough time when I broke it apart. And then finally, I said, okay, well, the inventory did its job. You got to that place where you're not angry. You're in acceptance, and you know what you need to do. Fast forward 3 years, this client, a former client who I worked with, and then I left the business relationship, ended up suing my former partner for a lot of money. It was very high profile and it was very ugly. And about a week before the arbitration case was going through, my ex-partner went into the hospital, and the doctor did not let her out. He was someone that was used to. The client didn't take care of themselves, compulsive overeater. And the doctor's like, you're not going anywhere. You are staying in the hospital. And so they called me and said, look, you were involved with this case and this client. And we saw that you need to go testify in her place about what you know. Well, that was like 5 or 6 years ago. I don't remember. Good. So I'm dropping off the line. They drop off 2,000 pages of legal documents and say, be ready on Monday. She screwed me over. Why should I help her? She was a horrible partner. I don't want to do this. And I call my sponsor. I'm like, why?
I'm going to save her life. I don't want to. Did she deal with this declining life at the time? She runs a clean business. He's totally trying to take her to the plan. He's like, all right, Joel can help through. So I did. And it was very interesting going through the process. I wasn't on trial. But we went through and answered everything and, you know, examined for 2 days. And it was very contentious. And the manager afterwards was like, wow. You did a great job. Thank you. I owe you. You really, on top of it, you knew everything. It was really great. And I had not had much interaction with this manager. So it was a chance for him to see how I did things and how I approached things. And, financial crisis hit. I was having a tough time. And I was like, why am I in this trial? Why am I doing this? I don't get it. I mean, it was one of the things. I just couldn't figure out why I got swept into this stuff. Well, then it began to become clear. My boss said, if you ever need something, let me know. I owe you. So I said, guess what? I need some money. I'm running out of money. My business is dying. You told me to come to you with a favor? I'm hauling it in. What do you got? I said, do you have another partnership? And what, you know, people are retiring. I need to take over someone's business. Something. I'm like, well, let me think about this. Went back the next day and says, hey, I've got actually a pretty good situation for you. All right. He said, well, we have two advisors. One was going to retire, and the other one's going to take over their business. Now the other one wants to retire. So we have to put someone to take over two books of business. And you might be a good fit. I was like, who are they? And I go, really, then? He goes, trust me, this is a really good deal. And it turned out to be an amazing deal. So I go back to, he wouldn't have offered that to me, you know, unless he said, I owe you, unless I showed up to this trial to save, you know, the hide of an advisor. I felt screwed over and didn't do a good job, but you know what? I did my inventory. I wasn't that angry with her at the point. I just didn't want to go out and save her. But you know what my sponsor said? Show up and tell the truth, and that's what I did. So I look back and go, now I know I, you know, maybe that's one reason why I was involved in this. I could have put this together, but along the way I was being taken care of. Then my sponsor would say to me again, are you bankrupt yet? I'm like, no. And what I began to discover was, not only was I not bankrupt, I was being taken care of. And not in the manner that I thought was possible. And he'd say, look, pray to have a character, you know. I'm like, look, I'm praying to have this character of this effect of fear of financial insecurity removed. And every single day, I'm praying to have this removed. And guess what? It is going away. So he, in his wisdom, said, stop praying to have it removed. Like, how is God going to know that?
Like, me telling God. And he goes, all you're doing is heightening the obsession of financial insecurity. And that was the best piece of advice I have ever gotten in the program. I was holding it up there. So for the next 2 weeks, I didn't pray to have this fear of financial insecurity removed. I assumed it was going to happen. And after 2 weeks, I was sleeping like a baby all through the night. No fear. I looked back and I'm like, this is amazing. So I had to stop praying and asking for things. And it actually talks about that in the big book in the 12 and 12. We do not pray for ourselves. We do not pray for things, but we pray for other people and how we can be effective in helping them. So all along, I was praying for the wrong person, me. So I had to stop praying to have this fear of financial insecurity removed. I had to stop praying for things for God to take care of me. I had to assume I was being taken care of. And that's what happened. And what I began to discover, I got this feeling that nothing is going to happen to me. By doing the inventory process, what I began to see is I'm my own worst enemy. There's no one out to get me. There's no one that hates me. At best, they don't think about me. At best, it's me. And if I turn it over, I'm taking care of. And so when I do that inventory process,
slowly over time. The layers get stripped away. And I have this sense of peace, and I still have this sense of peace, that no matter what happens, I say it this way, nothing's going to kill me. In the sense that, you know, my father would say, look, God's will for you is you will get through this, but you may lose your house. And you have to accept that that's going to happen, that could happen, and that is exactly what God wants to have happen. You could lose your job. That may be what God wants to have happen for you. And you have to be okay with that. And know that you're going to be taken care of. And apparently God was not in the cards, but literally every single time something would happen, and I'd call him up and I'd say, okay, yeah, the cease doesn't stand. And so you could be a little more excited about it. I go, yeah, but you're right. That's the problem. You're right again. You know? It was really tough for me to accept that. But what I began to see is I was going to be okay. And it's that thing that comes back to me being a compulsive over here and how I identify. That is who I am. You know, if I'm the person that works for the company and I get fired from the company, where's my identity? And if it's, you know, I'm a loving husband married to Elizabeth and we get divorced if she dies, where's my identity? You know, all of these things. You know, I have to come back to you. I'm a compulsive overeater. And all I have to do is show up, and if I act as if I'm being taken care of, it doesn't mean that bad things aren't going to happen. But bad things are going to happen. They don't have to happen to me. They just happen. But I have the tasks and the tools to help me get through it. And that gives me that peace of mind and serenity when it does happen. And when I do get that flare-up and get upset, and anger and inherent defects, I know, gee, I can run to this inventory process and find out extremely quickly what is going on. And, you know, my son wrecked his car the other day. He's 17. I bought him this, you know, 17-year-old car. We fixed it up. It wasn't a search accident. And, you know, it happened. I was really upset. And I'm thinking, why am I so upset? I need to write an inventory about this. And really, you know, part of it was I throw this money into it and it went down the drain. The other part of it was is maybe my vision for him is not going to come out the way I want it to. Maybe he's not going to be that responsible adult that I think he should be at 17, which no 17-year-old is. The unrealistic expectations. And maybe he's just a crappy driver. You know? So I get to turn over my expectations of how I think he should be living his life and how he should be doing things. And, yeah, life would be a lot easier if he had a car, but I bought him one, it's gone, he gets to get his next car, his life's going to be difficult. Okay, so his life's difficult. Maybe there's something in that for him that he needs to learn. I don't have to rush to fix it. So, all of a sudden, I can still love him tremendously and be supportive. But I don't need to get sucked up into all that stuff that I would normally get sucked into and easily. And so that's how the inventory process helps me to have some emotional equilibrium. And it's something, you know, some people ask, well, should I do this nightly? It really depends. Now, here's the thing. After a while, there was a group that started where we did 10-step inventories, and that's all we did. And we got a little obsessive about it. Because at a certain point, it's like, oh, this, you know, it's like becoming an eat freak. Well, let me go here, clean this up and polish this and that way. And sure, nothing ever gets dirty. You know, there's this idea that if I keep doing enough 10-step inventory, then, you know, nothing's going to go wrong. I'm not going to get upset or anything like that. Again, that whole control thing. And then at a certain point, I stopped writing inventories. Because, you know, for instance, with my ex-partner, the issue was really, I had to get to that point, get all the anger out, where I know I was just an acceptance. This is how this person is. I can't work with her. That's fine. It's time for us to go separate ways. She wants to take most of the accounts. Fine, we'll work out a nice sort of business divorce. I let the manager do it. We were both upset. So he said, you're both really pissed off at me. So I didn't make the right decision. He's right. And I was accepting. I'm like, okay. And I had done the work so that when I had to come back and help her out, I did it. And I did a good job. And I just like, let's go see why I'm supposed to show up at this thing and go through this process. Not, you know, this is going to take 2 weeks out of my life. I'm going to lose business. I can't focus on this. This isn't fair. Why am I doing it? She screwed me over. She's a horrible person. No. Like, let's find out what this is like. There's a reason I'm going through this. This would be a really interesting adventure. I've never gotten to be part of it before. I've never been in court in this. I found out it was very good. So, it's taking a situation and saying, maybe there's an alternative perspective. And it's only through doing the inventory process that my mind can open up to that alternative process, that alternative viewpoint. And therefore, I'm not trapped in my own ideas. And that's the thing that I think keeps bringing me back to the food. But at a certain point, after writing the inventory process, I am saying, enough. I now have to do the 11th step and turn it over. I now have to let God do His work. And I let that, I have to let my higher power. Yeah?
I just want to make sure I understand. So, what you're saying is you pray to ask God to do your work. But you may not say, God, I hope you help me have fun with my children, and I want to keep my house, and I want to keep God, and I want, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, what I do every day for my family is I ask God for strength and endurance and guidance to come to you and I think my whole family. For my son to be able to be in college, blah, 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 blah. And for my daughter to be in health, to be the willingness to help herself, and I ask you to help her with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do release her today with the desire to ask you to be with her.
Yeah.
And then I pay attention to me. Is that like, do I have the strength and ability to help support the family,
uh-huh.
you know, and to be there for them?
Mm-hmm.
Is that like, don't you know?
No, I don't.
The question is, you know, should I be doing the prayer that you talked about? You know, be there, support, and be there for your family. I think you can do whatever you wish. I mean, if that is, personally, to me, that sounds more like a reminder to me what my role is. I don't think my higher power needs to know all those things. I think my higher power is taking care of, you know, everybody in the way that they need to be taken care of. And I just have to remember that. And sometimes maybe that prayer is a reminder for yourself of that. Is there any other questions about? Yes.
Well, what about your chapter one, I believe, in the big book about that we don't pay for ourselves unless others will be helped or something to that
extent? Mm-hmm.
That and also, because it's a good example of that, also the
so, yeah.
It has to do with that.
Well, praying for ourselves, you know, the thing of it is that helping through the situation, you know, it's like when you care with the character defect of financial insecurity. I don't have to tell my higher power what's going on financially. My higher power knows. If I, by keeping it up there, I haven't accepted the fact that I'm being taken care of. It goes without saying that I'm being taken care of. I'm in good shape. That doesn't mean you're lying to what's going on financially and just spending whatever, but it, I am being taken care of in some fashion. My family is being protected. That doesn't mean that if something bad, you know, one of my son has another car accident and he gets injured, that he wasn't being taken care of. That doesn't mean that at all. But what it means is, you know, I have to be willing to accept whatever God has for their lives. And whatever that may be, I'm going to be okay. You know, they're going to be okay. Maybe not in the way, classic way that I think about that. I can't expect that no bad things are ever going to befall anybody in my life, including myself. You know, if you get cancer and die, you know, that happens. That happens to a lot of people. That doesn't mean that my higher power likes me any less or that I didn't learn the program well enough. That's just what happened. That was my strength. And maybe that's what's the way it's supposed to happen. And something out of that will come very, very good. I don't know what it would be. But I have to accept that that's okay.
And so by doing the inventory process, I get to find out what happens over time is the same stuff comes up with everybody. And so I get to go back to those emotional blind spots and look at that. And then eventually what it is in the prayer and meditation, looking at that. And, you know, we'll get into that in the spiritual realm next, but you know, back to the emotional side of things. You know, at the end of the day, by doing all of this, I get to have a little bit of peace of mind. I mean, that's all I ever wanted from food, was peace of mind. That's all I ever wanted from substances, was peace of mind. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what our motives are.
And the other part is called.
Yeah.
I said it might slip away.
Okay. I ask for each defect. That's me.
You can
do it all the way down.
So, in the specifics of what the fear of the system, what the fear of the financial insecurity looks like?
No, I'm not going to dissect it that much. What I'm going to do is I'm going to use that. So, for instance, if I'm angry at my brother, and the character defect is, I'm angry with him, it's my anger about how he's getting so much attention. I want to have that aspect of the character defect removed. And it's very important that it's specific to him and my relationship with my brother. Just having anger removed or all the character defects removed. For me, I do it specifically. Other people just say, well, you just have to do the prayer, blanket prayer, and you're done. There's no right way. You just do what you feel is the correct approach. I go through each single character defect and ask to have it removed in relation to each resentment.
Correct.
Yeah, that's my way.
But then, are you saying you just don't do it more than once? Do it once?
Well, sometimes I have to go back and I will find I have to, for instance, with my business partner, I kept getting resentful. And the reality of it was writing another inventory wasn't solving the problem. What solved the problem was I had to terminate that business relationship, and I was being too greedy trying to get the money from that business relationship. So I figured, well, let me write another inventory and try and make this work and turn it over. And my sponsor was very kind and loving and listening to that because he knew I wasn't ready to terminate that relationship. And then him to tell me that it wouldn't have registered with me. So I keep writing the inventory process, turn it over, ask the resentment to be removed, act as if the resentment was being removed, and then it would sometimes work for a while until she pulled something that really bugged the hell out of me, and I would get all upset. And the issue was, really, at that point, I should have said, you know, this is a relationship that doesn't work. But for me, reading underneath, I couldn't really see that come out of the inventory process. Was really at work, and I wasn't quite ready to walk away from it because I was afraid that if I walk away from it, I'm walking away from a fair amount of money. I'm leaving money on the table. She won my ego, and I wasn't in enough pain to just say, okay, we're done, and I'm going to trust them to be taken care of. So I had to keep writing those inventories, not quite understanding, but the process of doing them eventually brought me to that point where I came to acceptance and said, you know what? I'm not writing any more inventories about this person. I'm done. And we're going to terminate this. And I went in, you know, the next day and talked to my boss and said, we need to terminate this partnership. It's not working. And he's like, yeah, tell me about it. he wouldn't believe. So, but I had, you know, just because I'm going to do this, and even if I do it 100% right, doesn't mean that is going to come back and somehow I wasn't spiritual enough. sometimes I just have to work through these things for a period of time and work, and it doesn't mean that the steps aren't working or I'm not working the steps. I'm involved with a process that's going to take a while for me to let go of. And the more I do it, the more I recognize, and I don't have to do inventory for 6 or 9 months on something. Usually sometimes I do it 2 or 3 times and go, okay, you know what? I know now. I've done this 2 or 3 times. I got to look at changing my actions. Trying to change my attitude by dealing with the inventory. Eh, it's not working. Now I have to change my actions and do something different because whatever it is, I've taken it as far as I can with the inventory process. And that's something else that the inventory process shows me. Sometimes it will not tell me where the next path is, but it does tell me, okay, you need to turn right here. You need to make a completely different move because what you're doing is not working. You're getting that wall.
How is that different than the other example you gave where you kept saying to have the defects removed and you kept having the defects?
Well, in that example, yeah. See there. I mean, let's put it this way. You know, I will. What I didn't realize when I tried to have it removed and try and go away and it didn't go away was that the one thing I didn't realize was it acted as if the character defect had been removed. And, you know, whether it be with this situation dealing with a specific person, I say, like my ex business partner, that was one where the character defect I thought was anger and resentment. What it was greed. I hadn't gotten to that point of being honest enough with myself. I had to keep digging and digging and digging and saying, the reason I'm upset is I'm unwilling to walk away from this. I put in a lot of time, we're finally making a lot of money, and I'm not going to walk away and let her get all of it and me get none of it. That's not fair. I just wasted a whole bunch of my professional career doing this. Greed. Not trusting in God. That was, you know, I couldn't get to that next layer down yet. And sometimes that's going to happen. We're going to work at this certain level for a while. And you think the steps aren't working and the program isn't working. It is working. It's just like trying to take off a layer of varnish on some old furniture. You sometimes have to work at it a lot longer than you think. Yeah. What can I do about my part? Because at the end of the day, that person, I still see her, Beverly Hills is a very small place. She has a stake in this. And she is very happy the way she does. You know, she's very happy with how she handles things and does things. She didn't change that. You know? So, is it all me? It's all me as far as I'm concerned because I'm her prisoner if I wait for her to change. I will be captive to the day she dies, waiting for that apology or waiting for that change in behavior. So instead, I empower myself by saying, I'm not waiting for her to change. I need to change my attitude and then change my actions, like get the hell out of that relationship, and not have any feelings with her. And then when I do see her, I'm not angry. I'm genuinely interested. How are you doing? How are things going? There's no malice. There's no anger. There's no resentment. So what I have to do is take a look at it and say, okay, money here. Yeah. Here was the thing that really broke me over the edge. So I was running out of money. I was borrowing against retirement now. I took out a credit card advance. The company was going to give us they were going to give us our 5 years of bonuses up front. So my bonus from 2010 to 2015, they were going to give me 2009. Because basically, we were all broke. It was only one other time in the history of Wall Street to do this. So I come home, and everyone's in the backyard. I drive into the backyard and drive. And everyone's in the background, it's this little dog. Everyone's around, and I'm like, what's the dog? And my neighbors next door see me, and he literally went out of my backyard. Run! I go, why are you doing that? I knew. What I did not know is I was going to be hugged by ready to hit the roof. And so my wife is wanting to get a dog, and she wanted to get one for a long time, and the kids wanted to have a dog. So she got the designer dog, and it was about $2,000. And I'm like, what are you doing? And she says, well, I thought that, you know, you got the money. I go, no, look at it. She checks out when it comes to money. So. And she goes, well, you can return the dog. And I go, oh, yeah, sure. There's one thing my kids will remember. And their entire childhood, and that's the day that dad made them return the dog. No, that's years of therapy. Forget it. You and I both know that is not going to happen. And I got to tell you, I was so resentful. I was so upset at that. Because part of it was the spending the money, but what it was really about is one, he's not been paying attention at all to our financial situation or the stress of it. And two, as a partner, I need to rely on my partner. When my back is up against the wall, I need your help. Are you going to help me? Yes. And I accept that. There you go. So, there is. What do I do about that?
Yeah, I'm
going to
ask
you
how you balance it.
So, basically, she's not changing. One. Two, I get to decide. Stay married. Or leave. That's it. And if I say, I need to work on me accepting the fact that she spends money like a drunken sailor and I get drunken sailors about me. And she does other things that are really wonderful. She's a great mother. She is super dedicated. There's stuff she does around the house. There's stuff she does for me. And I can either focus on that stuff. Or I can focus on the stuff she doesn't do well. And build a case for that. And there are times when I build a case for that and say, I'm out of here. And there are other times when I have to go back and look at that lack of gratitude and say, wait a minute. You know, if I leave, there's only one person who's going to benefit, and it's not me. My kids aren't going to benefit, my wife's not going to benefit. So really, aren't I being a little selfish with that attitude? And I have to look at that. So yeah, I am. And at the end of the day, I can end up with somebody else who's just as bad for that financially. And chances are, the way we pick people, I can pick someone with similar issues. I've seen plenty of people in the program do that. So what it gets back to is, I'm upset because something inside of me is disturbed, and so I get to go back to the inventory process and figure out, not what's wrong with her and how I'm going to handle her, what's wrong with me that keeps getting upset, what is fear of financial insecurity. Well, it's taken care of. I mean, when this accident happened, you know, what is it, 0.1% of my, you know, income that we were talking about? Am I going to get upset about that? No. It's not worth it. Move on. Focus on other things. Divorce is a lot more expensive. You know. And focus in on all the good things that are going on. And so that is where I get to use that inventory process and realize I'm the problem. I'm the one that's getting upset. I don't need to be. She's not changing, I'm not changing. But if I want to get rid of and have peace of mind, what's more important? Do I get to be right? And say, oh, she's terrible, right? She's a problem. Or do I want to be free? That's what it comes down to. Do I want to have a loving relationship? Okay, yeah. I'm sure if you talk to her, it will be about three. Four things that drive her absolutely insane that I do repeat. And if you want to drive her crazy, and you talk to me about them several times, and I don't remember any of them, I'm sure it's there. That's just the nature of long-term relationships. So I get to be right, or I get to be free. I don't get to be both. And if I get to be free, that's very empowering. I'm no longer a victim of my circumstances. See, when I'm a victim of my circumstances, I get to lead over them. I have permission. What the steps and emotional recovery does, it takes away that permission to go lead. See, when your life is going great and you're feeling good about yourself, it's really hard to justify breaking your absence. It just doesn't even enter your mind. So I need to get to that point where I'm living on that plane, where I'm okay. You know, if I'm feeling good about myself, then I can feel good about her. If I'm constantly getting upset and this and that and the other, you know, and living with seething resentment, that eats away at my core. That eats away at my soul. I can't be at peace. And I'd rather be at peace. So I have a few less dollars. At the end of the day, that's all I have to take a look at. You know? And, you know, as you get older, you get a little bit of perspective. And that's part of it. You know? You go, well, you've got a little bit of attitude. Yeah, I've been in the program a long time. I've also worked with sex a long time. I have a lot of recovery. But part of it is I'm 50. I'm in my 50s. I could have done all this work in my 30s. I'd be more wound up because I'm in my 30s. There's something you know out as you get older. And I think that's a little bit of a disservice that we don't really talk to young people about in the program. They're like, wow, I can't be this serene. I've tried so hard. Well, part of it is to slow down. And you don't worry about it as much because you get perspective. But it's with recovery and perspective that it really makes a difference. I mean, the happiest people I know are people in the program 10 plus years of recovery in their 50s and 60s. I mean, they are by far, of anybody I know in the world, the most happy, well adjusted, and peace people. And I look at that and go, I want that. So, you know, that's what I get to work towards when I see those people in the program. Part of it, a little bit of it is age. I wouldn't be this recovered, I wouldn't be at this much peace at age, you know, 32. It just doesn't have to be possible. So, you know, that's the thing we don't talk about in the program. And I think we need to talk about it a little bit more. You know, part of it is recovery, yes, but part of it is also gaining perspective with time. And the inventory process turbocharges our perspective. Okay. That's my opinion and been my experience. Yes?
It's just like the fourth column, you do this character defect thing after you get the third column.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. I love the fourth column, and I've done it a little bit differently, but mm-hmm. It seems to me that there's a kind of a twist on that.
Mm-hmm.
My fourth column is, what is my part?
Yeah.
And I've always found that being able to see my part in my relationship with that person clears everything. I mean, it really is wonderful. Now, this is also seeing my part. I see I'm envious, or I'm selfish, or it's basically the same thing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just I never seen it presented like this, pulling up all the character. A lot more than I've been looking at.
Right. Well, sometimes you got to sort out for new words.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is really kind of pinpoint what's going on.
Yeah.
What's going on? It's like when I was doing that inventory process with that ex-partner,
yeah, you know, she was doing this, that, the other stuff. But it took a long time before it drilled down to the core. And that's when I was beginning doing inventory in earnest. So really, once you start doing the inventory process, you begin to figure out, oh, wait a minute, I'm not getting to the real problem here. I know I need to go a little bit. There's another level here that I have to get to. And then what happens is that suddenly, if you're not at war with people or institutions, you know, people are like, wow, can you hear what happened today? What the first said? I don't know. I didn't pay attention. I'm not going to buy any of that. You know, and that is, I don't talk politics with a lot of my friends. In fact, I'm like, okay, let's get together. And I have a little internal game. Let's go to dinner. Let's spend 2 hours together. And let's see if we can not. I don't tell them that. I'm not talking about anything political, even if we're in agreement. 100%. Because what does that get me? I want to be at peace with the world. Doesn't mean sticking my head in the sand. I'm very active and involved. But with my friends, I'm not changing anybody. So I really try and focus. So I can be at peace. At the end of the day, that's where I want to be. And when I'm at peace, I'm a lot happier. I feel good about myself. I'm obsessed with myself. And, you know, I love myself. You know, I'm very comfortable being alone. You know, because I'm happy with that person. And that's because I've been able to clear away all that stuff. So I can't say, well, she made me do it. You know, she got me so angry. You know, or he really, you know, if he had done that, I would have gone, you know, berserk. And, you know, in older days, people would call it self-restraint. But it's taking it, it's even before the self-restraint. I don't have to restrain myself because I remove all the stuff that's going to set me off. Because at the end of the day, I'm the one responsible for how I feel about everything. And if I don't like this, I can recreate my world. You know? I don't watch them. I don't listen to them. I have to read a little bit about them. And it's really amazing how little news you need. You know, I mean, it used to be we had 3 networks and a half hour. Now, and I used to work in PR. I used to work on Capitol Hill. And so I would read the newspaper and it's like, okay, who put this article in here? How and what do they want me to think when I walk away from this article? And that's how I was taught to read newspapers. Well, if you do that today, you think, who put this article here and who wants me to read it and what do they want me to believe? It's a very different way. Most of the stuff out there today is not news. Period. Because they've got to do 24-hour content. I can buy into that. Or I can go find a really good book and immerse myself in it. It's all like, it's that thing about being very careful about what I let in. I'm very protective. I'm very protective about the meetings I go to. But believe me, we've all been in meetings where it's, you know, negative. Okay, I'm not going to go to that meeting. Those people, they want that, that's great. I'm going to go to a meeting where they focus on recovery. Or it's a very positive thing. So I'm very, very careful about what I allow in. Because I'm sensitive. And for me, I turn to the food. So I have to take precautions about that. And as long as, and no one else has to know about it, I can't go, oh, I can't go to that meeting, I can't go. It's like, no, I like this one. You know, a little bit of positivity. And so that is, and it's a shift. And the other thing is I have to think nice thoughts. I get a response early on and say, why don't you think pleasant thoughts? I thought, no, how nice. Okay? I'm thinking about pleasantly killing you. You didn't like that. But it has a good thing. It's like if I walk around and think, oh, she did this, and he did that, and this is terrible. Oh, God, I can't believe your friends and such a thing. This, and this, this, and that. And then, you know, someone honks at me, and I go nuts and I ran my car into them. Is that how we live? But if I think pleasant thoughts, I'm okay, so I'm off. I'm okay. Sorry. I'm okay. So I get to think pleasant thoughts. And I have to read whatever I think about, I manifest. And if I'm in turmoil, and sometimes I like to be in turmoil, I like chaos, and I like crisis, because that gives me a great reason to eat. So if I can change that, and I can be around people that are in recovery, that are working on a solution, maybe not perfectly, then I have a chance. And if I rewire and rethink about what I'm thinking about, that's why I want stupid comedy movies. You know, I need to laugh. We don't laugh enough. There's a great interview with Steve Martin talking about how he really, his career took off. And he goes, back in the 60s and the early 70s, it was like really serious. Vietnam War and this. And he goes, so I came up with this idea that we need to laugh and be goofy. And if you look at a lot of his act in the early 70s, he was this goofy guy. And he was a hit. Because people wanted to relax, they wanted to laugh, they wanted something that wasn't serious. Because everyone was so serious. And I think in a way we're back then, there again. So I try and not focus in on all that stuff. And I try and look at the humor in things. And I try and think, okay, what's a good way to look at this situation right now? And it's not to be Pollyannish. It's say, I get to decide today where I need to put my focus. And that's going to influence how I feel about myself. And it's also going to influence the people around me and who I attract. It's very simple. You know, because when I'm in tension and in turmoil, there's something about a big burrito that just calms me down. Or carve out and go into a coma. And if I don't have all that stuff going on, then there's no need for that. And it becomes much easier to be absent. And so a lot of that is that individual process. And that, and I just cannot exercise that enough. Any other questions?
Yes.
I just have a comment. I really like what you
said. Okay.
Yeah, I really like what you said. That things don't happen, many things happen. Because it's like, when I first realized it, I think that's a really, like, I'm not there yet with everything, but I feel like it's a really great way to look at things. Because we're talking earlier about being angry, and about being justice.
Right. Well, and part of that came from, you know, I say, oh, this happened, you know, God is screwing me over, and this and that. My son is like, well, what do you mean, new life? And you mean, new God? Because my God doesn't screw me over, and my life doesn't screw me over. And part of it was perspective. I remember we bought this old house and fixing it up, and, you know, everything seemed to be $15,000. $15,000. Well, how much is this to fix it? $15,000. Is there anything that's like $2,000? Yeah, $500? No, it's not $15,000. I'm home, I just did that. And my wife at the time was basically being general contractor, working and taking care of all of that. And I was just like, it just sounds like I feel like I'm being screwed over by everyone, and they're just, you know, taking me to the cleaners, and I can't believe this. And just, honestly, because you've never gone through this process, to me, it sounds incredibly smooth. And your wife's like, I probably got a really good job. And yeah, that's about right. But you can't. That's just the way it is. You know? And I was like, okay. And he goes, maybe these things are happening because they need to be replaced. It has nothing to do with you, and this is just a cause of it. And that's fine. It's not happening to me. And that is, we get into the thing of, you know, is my higher power the type of higher power that finds me the parking space right in front of the meeting? Or is the higher power that gives me peace of mind and allows me to really navigate and situations that use the bathroom and handle them with grace and ease? Yeah. There's parking space. It's there. I'm not sure that that's the higher power's work. But I'd rather have the other stuff, the working with distinction, grace, and ease. That's where I can have the people there's some hope there. And it's, you know, I'm not always a wonderful person. You know, I still have my low up. I still have the stuff that sets me off. But the cycles are much shorter. And I don't cause as much disruption. I don't need to turn to food to do that. And then have the remorse and that cycle that keeps going on and on again. before my whole life was out of cycles, I was setting myself up, and I didn't understand how to stop that. And the inventory process really helped me. And then when we get into, you know, after we've done that, we've done the fourth step, and we get into the eighth step, which is, you know, thinking about that list of people we need to make amends to. Like, look, I'm in college, you know, I didn't hurt anybody. How was I sorry? How did I hurt anybody? I was a great son. Who did I hurt? So I had to put that on my list. My father says, did anybody hurt you? I'm like, oh, yeah. Bring that list down. And that is my amends list. My mother, my brother, my girlfriend, that kind of stuff. And what I saw was, I placed myself in a position to be hurt. Well, let me do all this stuff for them. You know, I did all this stuff, you know, to help my girlfriend out and do it. She didn't want me to do anything. I wanted to do it because I wanted to push her in a certain direction. And I was going to be Mr. Nice Guy and help her out, and I was going to manipulate her. And when things didn't go the way they were supposed to go, I got really upset. And I felt hurt. And I felt betrayed. Well, the reality of it was that I was trying to manipulate her. And so I had to go back, see that in the inventory process. So, yeah, in my mind, she hurt me. I didn't hurt her. But I placed myself in that position. And it was difficult. Very, very difficult relationship. And so, you know, I made amends. Many years later, when I was at a point where I couldn't be back, and, you know, all that stuff, I mean, it seems so long ago, but, you know, I can't say, you know, I talk to maybe once every couple of years, and you know, she's got kids, and I have a wife, and I have kids, and I have a wife, and all of that. But, you know, I really master manipulator, but I never hurt anybody. Now, I was a people pleaser. I was the nudge. I was the one that was going to get you to do something even though you didn't want to do it, but I do it in such a nice way. You know, I know there's no other compulsive overeaters like that. And, you know, and so when I make this list, part of the important point of the list is, one, I have to forgive everybody on that list first. Because if I can't forgive, how can I expect to be forgiven? So I had to forgive everybody. Again, meaning on my side. Well, she's the one that broke up with me. She's the one that was, you know, lying to me. She's the one that started dating my friend behind my back. Not me. Her. She's the one. No, I need to forgive her first. I place myself in a position to be harmed. So again, what it brings me back to is, I can be a piece of the world. And what happens is the narrative of my adult life, the narrative of my life changes from being a victim to being an active participant in my own life. And the narrative of my life changes, how I view myself changes, how I view the world changes. So I go in and step eight, I forgive everybody. And that was a process that took about a year. I had that list. I had a real spend time on that list. I remember I was living in Philadelphia. It was 1990. And I had a year where I didn't know anybody in Philadelphia. So it was time. I went to meetings. I went to work. I was basically it. And I got to really focus on this list and make amends. And, you know, with my mother, she's not a nice person. I mean, she's like a mafia donna, you know. She needs to have an enemy. She needs to have a hated rival. And sometimes I was a hated rival, sometimes my brother, sometimes it was her husband. And that was just the way it was. And she's not a very nice person. You know, and I made amends. I didn't say, I'm sorry for hating you so much. No, I didn't do that. But I was very difficult and passive aggressive. And, you know, I just began, and we had it out a couple of times. And I, part of me being, making amends was being honest. And saying, I'm sorry, I know you want me to do that. I'm not doing that. You know, I'm not going to be a carrier prison. If you've got a problem with so-and-so in the family, you talk to them. I'm not doing that. That's not my role. I'm sorry. So part of my amends was a very messy one in being honest, being very honest about my relationship, what I was going to do and not do, but not do it in a mean way. I just said, look, I'm not going to do that for you. If you want to have a conversation with that person, you need to go talk to them. I'm not involved. Sorry. And, you know, my brother, who's a big problem, she says, oh, you guys, this is what you tried to do. I can't believe it. Oh, he's such a horrible person. He's such terrible. I go, well, he's my video. And she go on and on and on. And finally, I just say, amend the relationship. I said, I can no longer have a conversation with you about my brother because our entire relationship is you talking about my brother and me offering you advice and how to deal with him and you not following him. You've come to me for 20 years and you've never once followed through with anything I suggested. And this is all you talk about. So I'm asking you very kindly never to turn up my brother again. It is not a pleasant conversation. What I discovered was we did not have a relationship with anything to talk about when I pulled my brother out of that. I was stuck. And throughout my adult life, I had these same dreams every night. I was running. I was at the spot. I was at the game farm. And I was trying to get away. And I couldn't figure it out. And no one's talking. And this and the other. And what I discovered was that the dream was about me trying to break away from my family. I had to reclaim my adulthood. Because this is who I am. This is how I live my life. You still going to that away thing? You know, they really make you very mean. I'm like, you mean, what do you mean, make me mean? Oh, I'm not going to do everything you asked me to do. I got to get my own mind. Okay, I see. Part of making an amends, changing the relationship, was me being honest with everyone and saying, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I know you want me to do that, and that's the dynamic of our relationship. I can't do that. This is what I can do. You and I can have a relationship. You and I can talk about our lives together and do things together, but it can't involve my brother. Sorry. I'm not willing to do that. And it was very wild. After she saw I wasn't going to change, we had a better relationship. And now she has dementia. She's at home. Someday she knows me, someday she doesn't. I don't think she knows my name. She kind of knows who I am. People think that, you know, real name is that one time, not at all. You know, that's just where she is. I mean, the reality of it is Alzheimer's has made her much more easy to deal with. I mean, you know, she has been, but I love her very much. There's no animosity. There's no, you know, you really mess up my childhood. That's the way I was in the family program. I don't have that anymore. So, why? Because I made a decision in looking at doing the inventory process that I kept placing myself in a position to get angry and upset and be used, and I couldn't stand up and say, I'm sorry, we need to change our relationship. And here's how it has to happen for me to continue to interact with you. I love you, but this is not going to change. And I had to really fight for that. And once I did, the nightmare stopped. I can't say we were close after that. That's okay. That was just the way it was. It was a real amazing thing to see that our whole relationship was built around the dysfunction of my brother. There are a lot of families where that's the case. So, you know, I didn't have to feel sorry for myself. It was just the way it is. And now, I'm very much at peace, and I fly back to see her a lot. We take care of her, and she's a wonderful spot. And, you know, I'm not burdened at all. And if she dies tomorrow, I'm okay. My father died very, very sudden, and I have done a lot of step work around him. And very much his loss. When he died, I felt sad, but there was nothing unfinished. And I remember driving to the hospital, flying across the country to see him before he died, hoping I'd get there before he passed away. And just praying that he would just make it till I got there, and that he does survive. And I knew it was not looking good. But I also thought, you know what, there's nothing unfinished. There's nothing unfinished. I wish I had said to him, or I wish he could have done this. He didn't do it. he was very much at peace. And yeah, it was sad when he died, but you know, he was very much at peace. And that to me, to get that from the center and the program, it's just unbelievable. And all of that stuff works with having a positive relationship with other people and with the world. And that's really, so it all comes back to that inventory process. And then in the amends thing, a lot of times we think the amends thing, so the other thing with amends, a lot of times with that girlfriend, I thought, can we then retain that together? No. My son was like, okay, you do not need any amends to this person. I sort of explained this whole thing, this ex girlfriend. And I finally go, no, no amends. You don't need to get in there. No. I was like, okay. You know, that's why I was sponsored to go through that stuff. But, you know, a lot of the amends is changing. Amends needs to change. And sometimes that can be a little bit messy. But what has to happen is I've got to understand the set process. What is my truth? What is it that I you know, who am I? I get to find that out very quickly. Where do I feel comfortable? And how do I feel comfortable interacting in relationships? Even ones that I've had since birth that I think I have no control over, I have plenty of control over, and how I'm going to react to them and interact with them. And then, in a loving way, I have to say, look, we need to change this in order for this to work for me. If you want me in your life, and I want you in my life, this is what we need to do. And I understand, and I'm not going to have any ill feelings if you don't want to do it that way. And my mother didn't want to do it that way. That's fine. That didn't even stop calling her. Or you didn't stop, you know, seeing her. Or you didn't stop, but the focus shifted a little bit. But I was still a loving son and still, you know, very, very eager for it. But I don't have to walk around that hurt. And so that is really, you know, all that work brought me to the amends process. And I feel very much at peace with people that I've been making amends with. And, any other questions? Thinking about transition. Why don't you take a couple minutes break?